Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. We're here to discuss the offense versus the Colts. And joining me is Nick Mehta. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great. Really enjoyed that Colts game. As ugly as it was at times, I thought it was very, very formative on both sides of the ball. Definitely a lot of takeaways about the offense.
Yeah, if you listened to the Like episode, I hope you did. Lots of new emerging stars on that side of the ball. Inside linebacker, nose tackle, outside linebacker. Lots of players in the front seven stepping up and doing their job. Not so much on the offensive side of the ball. Lots of tough stuff to talk about. Nick, who was your big star of the game?
I think Keaton Mitchell is probably the very easy answer there. I'm going to say Rasheen Ali, because I wasn't surprised by what I saw out of Keaton Mitchell, because it's what you and I have been seeing out there every day in practice. So to see it, I'm sure, was a great relief and very exciting for fans. But I was more excited to see Rasheen Ali translate some of the just decisiveness and some of the juice, to use a more online term, that I've been seeing from him in camp lately. He just looks so much more confident, and his vision, his understanding of where he's supposed to go on each run and how to set up his blocks just looks very much expanded from last year. And of course, the big special teams return, a great way for him to say, hey, I'm a good partner with Keaton Mitchell on the kick returns to keep him on the roster, because I do think coming into this training camp, he was a little bit on the bubble.
Yeah, the Ravens, a lot of very significant roster decisions to make still down the line. And Rasheen Ali is the fourth running back. It's one of the big ones. You know, John Harbaugh's been talking about the sixth outside linebacker. John Harbaugh's been talking, he hasn't really been talking about, but it could be a fifth inside linebacker. It could be another defensive lineman potentially.
The Urban signing really mixed that group up too. The Urban signing added a lot of uncertainty into that group, and it's a good problem to have. They'll say it a lot. It's a good problem to have, and I'm sure when we get closer to roster cut, it's also, you could think about maybe trying to flip some guys in a trade, even if it's in a pick swap. You just get the surplus value out of it.
Yeah, completely agree that the Ravens are in a position to do a player for player, or a player for seven, or a player even for seven conditional situation, and potentially get guys. Let's talk a little bit about the deployment order on this side of the ball, because there are a lot of information gained from there. Not so much a quarterback, where Rush and then Leary handled all the snaps. Cooper Rush, what did you think of his game in general?
So Rush really didn't get that much run. I think he had four passing attempts. It's not great for him to start with the interception, an extremely ill-advised ball. If we can talk about that play for a minute, a slot fade thrown to the inside part of the field, just a ball that he, just looking at the route alone, he had no business throwing to that. I think it was Dayton Wade. I don't remember. He had no business throwing to whoever the receiver was there, targeting him in the first place. And the throw was put in the worst place possible. I mean, it was, it was only a one-handed interception because the receiver committed offensive pass interference to try to break it up. So not a great start. And then just didn't get, you know, he only had three more. I think he only had four more dropbacks and three more passing attempts after that. And so I think it's a small sample size to judge on. You know, he was his, I believe one of the drive, his last drive was, I think, never happened because LeJonte Wester returned that punt return for a touchdown, which I'm sure we'll talk about as well. So, you know, inconclusive, I think for that reason, I would have liked to see him out there longer. In a game where Devin Leary played like three quarters, I just would want to see Rush more in these next two games to feel more confident about him going into the season, because he hasn't looked great at training camp. He doesn't really inspire that much confidence at training camp, and he certainly didn't on Thursday.
With you all the way, Devin Leary, obviously a very bad night, takes most of the vitriol from Ravens fans in terms of what went on, but Rush also a difficult start to that game, and I'm with you on the pass there that it wasn't well positioned. Dayton Wade didn't really do a great job of defending against the interception, but it was what it was. Let's move on to running back. Obviously Henry and Hill rested for the night. Mitchell in for, I think, what a lot of people agree is too much time.
Yeah, this is something I noticed in training camp. I felt like since the pads came on, Keaton Mitchell has been just oddly getting kind of beaten up a little bit. It just seems like of the players taking hits in practice, he seems to be one taking the most. Part of that is because of how often the ball goes to him. But, you know, seeing him out there, I understand him wanting to get back comfortable in full speed against a hostile defense. You know, it is a little bit different playing against your own defense because you know they're coached not to hurt you. Somewhere in your head, you know that. Against a hostile defense, they're not really thinking about, oh, we can't hurt Keaton Mitchell on this play. And so I know it was good for him to get that experience. But after his first touchdown, it was pretty clear he's back. He's comfortable. He's fighting through contact. He's not having any issues with that. He's cutting. He's turning. He's accelerating. We're good. Put him on ice, because when you have a player that is that good, you want to protect him, especially one who has been through a big injury and athleticism is such a big part of their game. You know, to me, with the preseason, I think you kind of have to choose. We're either going to give everyone a couple reps, or we're going to protect the guys we need for the season. And Keaton Mitchell is one of the guys they need for the season, along with all the other ones that they sat.
Now, Nick, you and I have been at camp, and I would guess that you have the same opinion as me, but that Mitchell has been the single best Ravens player in all of camp. Tez Walker, we could point to as being above where we thought he was. We could point to any number of defensive players, Jalen Armour Davis and maybe Mike Green, as being guys who have outperformed their expectations so far. But Keaton Mitchell has been the guy in terms of being a magnet for the football, particularly when Cooper Rush is on the field.
It kind of reminds me of, I think really it was last training camp. I think I felt it in 2023, but really felt this way last year, that there were huge stretches of last summer where Isaiah Likely was the absolute best football player on that field. He was, and it's easy to get excited. We get excited about day three receivers a lot in training camp, but with Likely, it was something different. He was going up against the first team offense. He was beating them. And so, and we saw how that turned out last year, you know, very clearly on his way. I feel the same way about Mitchell now. One thing with Mitchell is he's mixing in with first, second, even some third team with Devin Leary. So sometimes he is going up against the backups, the undrafted guys. But even when he's in there against the ones, he looks confident, and that's the biggest thing to me. I think a very, very underrated part of football players' game, because it moves so fast, is their confidence. I've really felt this way about like Patrick Queen, for example. His development in Baltimore, really, there was a lot of confidence issues, and with Mitchell, the confidence is I can trust my knee. I can trust that I can still do all the physical things I did before, something he's talked about. And so I think that's probably the most important thing, but also pass catching has been really exciting, looks very natural. I think you have noted on a number of occasions how well he catches the ball in stride. And that's definitely something that wasn't a huge part of his game coming out of college.
Yeah, I agree completely. His transition from catch to run has been terrific so far that we've seen. But he's a magnet for the ball with Cooper Rush on the field. It's like, okay, look at the play and then check down Keaton Mitchell. It's just the quickest thing that that he does. Rasheen Ali, the third running back, second running back in this game, obviously, ran very well, obviously had a big kick return as well.
Yeah, and like I said earlier with Ali, it's the development I'm seeing from last year to this year that I was hoping to see. You know, when he was drafted, there was some, okay, he's an okay runner. They really liked how he looked in pass protection at the Senior Bowl. But to me, it was a very clearly a developmental running back. But Lamar Jackson's offense, like his rushing offense, is able to get so much out of running backs. I like the idea of bringing on a guy like Ali with that receiving skill set. But he's really developed as a ball carrier, as a back on the ground. And Thursday's game was, you know, probably the best we've seen him play. I do note that he has progressed, and I can even have, I've even seen it since the spring, that just his chunk gains are getting a little bit longer. He's shaking free a little bit more. And I think, just like I said earlier, very crucially, he is, his vision and confidence of where he's going and how to set up his blocks is just so much better than it was last year.
Yeah, completely agree. And Ali, on the kick return, did a great job of following blocks. It wasn't really so much him in terms of causing missed tackles forced or anything like that. It was a case of him following blocks very effectively and did some really good things. He did have some good things as a runner. He had a loss of two that he turned into a gain of seven in the run game that was very positive, but I thought that Ali was outstanding. And then D'Ernest Johnson recently signed. Obviously, Marcus Major has been out with a concussion, as we know from camp, for about a week now, I guess. But D'Ernest Johnson took a huge set of the workload.
Yeah, Johnson is a vet that they brought in, I think, very clearly to be a camp body and help them get through these preseason games, especially with the expectation that you would want to sit Mitchell at some point. I guess I was surprised at how many carries he was getting. I was surprised kind of overall at how much, I guess I wasn't surprised at how much the Ravens ran the ball based on how their quarterbacks were playing. But that so many of the carries went to Johnson and not Ali, I found a little bit odd, because I just don't see Johnson as even a real short-term investment for this team beyond getting them through some preseason games, getting them through this game where they had someone injured. So I guess I was just would have wanted Ali to get more touches, especially since he had such a good start, and just give him more opportunities and kind of fuel that confidence a little more.
Of the backs that went, I thought D'Ernest Johnson really carried the load in the way that was necessary for this team. They needed him to take a lot of carries off the big two. And then sure, I would have seen Ali take some more carries in terms of what he did, but nine is fine, and nine was more than enough for Mitchell. In fact, I was kind of screaming for that to be too much.
Yeah, there were kind of murmurs in the press box, I would say, when Mitchell came back out. Not for the first drive after his touchdown, but I think he was on the field for two more drives after his touchdown. I think that was the one where there were murmurs of like, okay, they probably should take him out and put him on ice at this point. You know, we knew that Marcus Major was out, and that's why they signed D'Ernest Johnson. But exactly, that's why they signed D'Ernest Johnson, so that he and Ali could shoulder the load once we had kind of reproof of concept with Keaton Mitchell, if you will.
Okay, moving the tight end position, Mark Andrews rested. Now Isaiah Likely, obviously on IR, not on IR, but he's injured, and we don't know when he'll be back. So he might start the season on IR. If that's the case, he'll miss at least four games. He might go to the roster, then be IR'd, and he'll miss at least four games. But in any case, Charlie Kolar started this one, played extremely well, I thought.
Yeah, Kolar looked great, I think, especially with, you know, with Rush at quarterback. I think he caught one of Rush's two completions, or maybe both of them. and, you know, was didn't play much, as he should have. I was kind of curious if he was going to get sat outright because they added Scotty Washington and Baylor Cup earlier in the week. So I was kind of curious if they were going to sit Kolar outright because he was going to come in as tight end two. And with the amount that the Ravens run 12, that is, you know, almost a starting position in this offense. So he did get some run, which I thought was good. And I mean, it's the Charlie Kohler we're used to. Something the Ravens coaching staff has pointed out on multiple occasions this summer is that Charlie was drafted as more of a receiving tight end. That was what he was known for coming out of college, even more as a guy who split into the slot. And so his improvements as an inline blocker just complement his existing skill set and make him, like, he's slowly becoming a very complete tight end. He just has been blocked on the depth chart. I do genuinely wonder if he was, a true tight end two for the last 2 years, where might he be as a receiver? This is a contract year for him, and I do think that he's going to get priced out of Baltimore, because a guy who can block as well as he is already is making money in this league. And if you watch Charlie Kohler consistently enough, you see that there's a lot of receiving potential to be that is untapped there.
We watched Josh Oliver get paid in a similar way, and I think that's absolutely true with Kohler. Kohler, terrific game. I'm sure we'll talk about him individually when we get to the players. Mitchell Payton, the next player in, and honestly, I thought he looked very good as a blocker and not so good. He didn't get targeted as a receiver.
Yeah, and that is kind of what I've seen from him in camp. He's not a great athlete. He doesn't have any ability to sell his routes to make up for that. So it is very kind of easy to see him coming out and rounding off his breaks. And he really is a run blocking guy. I think one of the things they're evaluating with their use of their tight ends and Lucas Scott, the fullback, was trying to figure out who they're going to bring up as the early season tight end three to run block if Isaiah Likely is not healthy. So I think that was part of the evaluation tonight. Like you said, I think Mitchell Payton did very well in the blocking. I thought Washington and Scott did okay. I don't think the game really differentiated between the three of them for me who I would want active in week one if Isaiah Likely is not
able. Yeah, completely agree with you, Nikhil, that Mitchell Payton looked good as a blocker. He didn't get any targets as a receiver. Scotty Washington got, I think, one target during the game, also had a good block, and Kupple only played five snaps at the end of the game. He's not a guy that it's obvious is part of the roster crunch, but he may or may not. We'll see over the next 2 weeks whether Baylor Kupp is a guy that they really want to keep around.
Yeah, Kupp is, I didn't know that much about him before he came. I think he strikes me as more of a receiving tight end. I think just physically looking at him, he is a bit thinner, and he doesn't look like he has the heft for inline blocking like the Ravens are looking for out of their tight end three. So I think he would have to show something as a receiver, because I also think Scotty Washington and Mitchell Payton have all of the familiarity of being, I think, have been both been here for the last two training camps. So this is their third summer with the team. They're very familiar with Monken's offense. And I think just specifically in the role of week one tight end three in the event of an Isaiah Likely absence, they have the edge on that. I'm just not sure I see this team trying to carry Baylor Kupp beyond Isaiah Likely being healthy, or carrying another tight end behind the three and Patrick Ricard beyond when he gets back on the field.
Yeah, and you're saying beyond on the 90 alone, not beyond that. And presumably Isaiah Likely's not going to be available until about week four, so Kupp could potentially stay on the practice squad during that period. What I think is interesting about Mitchell Payton is good blocker, and I could see him more taking the role of Charlie Kohler during the early weeks of the season, where Charlie Kohler is catching a few more balls than he did the last 2 years.
Yeah, and that's kind of exactly what I was saying about Kupp versus Mitchell Payton and Washington, and Mitchell Payton looking like the better blocker and having been in camp for much longer than Washington and Kupp have gives him a significant edge. What I wonder is, how much does Likely's absence impact the actual 53-man roster? Will they go with the practice squad elevations, which would require sneaking probably at least one of those guys onto the practice squad? Will they go with the elevations for the first few weeks with Likely? Or if they don't and they keep an extra tight end on the roster, what does that say about Likely? And is there any additional concern about you know, his timeline, because the Ravens have made it seem like he's going to be working to be back for week one. I don't think that's the case just because he's coming off surgery. And I don't think that it's a very good idea for him to try to be back for week one.
Yeah, completely in agreement, by the way, that likely looks to me a guy who should start on IR probably after the roster decision is made. So you have an extra spot you can maintain at that point. And we'll be back in week five. And that gives you 4 weeks where you have to find that third tight end. And Mitchell Payton is a potential idea for that. Cup could be a guy for that, depending on whether he looks up to it. I don't think Cup was ready to play within the offense this last week. He didn't get in until, I think, the second or last drive. No, last drive of the entire game. Those are the five plays he played. So, he's at least a week away from us seeing if he might be part of the offense.
Yeah, and I think part of the other calculus, like you mentioned, with Isaiah likely going on IR, yes, you would then have the room to keep another tight end on the roster, or you could try to use that to help you out somewhere else and still try and sneak the practice squad elevations on. I think one of the tight ends would have to really show something to end up on the 53-man roster and not go on the practice squad path, because Mitchell Payton and Scotty Washington have both been practice squad guys the last 2 years. And so they're probably going to be able to be on the practice squad and be elevated early in the season. It's unlikely they get poached.
And not a risk in either case of losing those guys, as far as we know. You cut those guys, they're not going to be picked up by another team.
Exactly.
Tight end depth does attrit like any other position as the season goes on. But I think in the first 4 weeks, both Washington and Cup would be guys you would keep during that period, and Mitchell Payton for that matter as well. Let's move on to the wide receiver position. Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, and DeAndre Hopkins all out for the game. Didn't see action, obviously. Wade, Walker, and Wallace started the game. Take me through the wide receiver group as you would.
Yeah, so this is a really tough one to evaluate, right? Because the quarterback play was just so poor. It really was partially just because you're following where the ball goes, and if the ball goes and it doesn't really matter if the ball is really off target because the receiver doesn't even get a chance to make a play on the ball. So Wallace, I think Wallace only had one catch, didn't play for that long. A very clear sign of how this team feels about him. Devontae Walker, I think, just was a little bit disappointing after the camp. And I think that was almost unsurprising that he would look so good in camp. We've heard this before. Day three receiver looks really good in camp, and then the preseason game comes and they're nowhere to be found. I don't think it's, a particular indictment of Devontae Walker. I just think the passing offense had absolutely no rhythm, and it made it very, very hard, in my opinion, to evaluate the receivers, because even when they were getting open, the ball just wasn't anywhere near. And so you don't get to see them compete for the ball. You don't get to see them compete after the catch. You are really missing a full picture of who they are as a receiver when the passes just aren't there.
We had a mixed set of results for Devontae Walker, is the way I'd put it. I thought had tremendous focus to catch the ball on the left sideline where he got the DPI associated with it. He also had a false start. He also had balls overthrown where he didn't get the proper separation that you would hope. It looked like he almost gave up on the route in the right corner of the end zone where, not sure if it was Rush or Leary, threw him the ball, but he overthrew on one of the early drives. It was a back and forth night for Devontae Walker. Had two good run blocks, by the way, that were outstanding on the runs by one by Mitchell and the other by Ali in terms of what he did. So some positive things to see. I'm more encouraged, I think, by that than I was by the negatives that occurred in the passing game. He caught 0-2 on the night.
Yeah, I think when the passing game can't find a rhythm like that and the quarterbacks, we'll get to the offensive line later, I'm sure. But, one of the issues of the quarterback play is that they were just not comfortable in the pocket. Leary was very clearly uncomfortable in the pocket with the amount of pressure he was getting. you know, he didn't do a good job responding to that. It didn't seem like he did a great job diagnosing and adjusting pre-snap. But when that happens, there are just more targets, more off-target balls to the receiver. And, you know, mentally, you know, I talked about confidence earlier. Mentally, it gets tough in a game like that when you realize your quarterback is just not going to be able to get you the ball. And then your offense just starts running the ball constantly because that's all you really can do. So for Washington, I think this was a, kind of a good lesson in a way what it's going to be like a little bit being the wide receiver five on this roster when you're going to be getting in the game to run block and probably not get the ball thrown to you that much because you're very rarely going to be the primary read on a lot of these plays.
Yeah, great point. He will be five or six on this roster. I think he's actually kind of behind Wallace because Wallace is such a good run blocker in terms of what he does. But Walker in this game, I thought, really showed a lot in terms of that run blocking on those two plays. Wallace was in there briefly, caught a ball as well. Nobody caught a ball over 10 yards except for Wester.
Yeah, LeJounte Wester. And that wasn't even really a good pass. It was the ball was underthrown, and he had to make a really good late adjustment on it. So what I loved about that play was kind of the double separation, which was the initial separation to draw the target up the sideline in the first place. You know, a guy his size has to get good separation for a deep ball to be coming because that catch radius is so much smaller. But it's a bad, he gets targeted, it's a bad ball, and he makes a really good late adjustment on an underthrown ball to catch it as he's going to the ground. I couldn't quite tell if he kind of sold the cornerback up the field or if he was just trying to adjust and the cornerback kept running by him. But either way, I think that was a really encouraging play from a guy who I feel like we've only seen make plays over the middle on crossing routes where his speed gets him separation. That one forced a little bit more of receiver play instead of just athlete play. And I really appreciated that out of Wester's rep.
Great, great point, by the way, there. But multiple points there. But I thought that Wester, in terms of his receiving skills, really showed out in this game from that. I do think most of what he'll do for the Ravens will be more gadgetized, more the threat of motion, of jet motion, the threat of coming over the middle will be something that he gives the Ravens. All kinds of possibilities for using him in a mesh route concept where he'll get a tight end free. But anyway, I thought a great night for him. He probably was the Ravens MVP.
Yeah, I think he was. I guess we can talk about the punt return, or if I can talk about the punt return for a second. I was very, obviously his 87-yard return was electrifying. It set M&T Bank on fire for the first time, you know, this season. I was not more encouraged, but I think his first rep I thought was more interesting in a way.
Yes.
Because he bobbled it. He caught it. He ran into his own teammate, but he still turned it into a 17-yard gain. And that was the Wester that I feel like we have seen a little bit more of in camp. He has not been, I wouldn't say he has been the most consistent punt returner in terms of catching the ball. And we haven't seen that many live punt return reps. But there are times when he looks like he's trying to figure out which way to go. And as the rush is coming towards him, as the other team is coming, or as his the punting team is coming towards him. And this one was like a very live action, him figuring it out, him understanding that, you know, first just bobbling the ball and securing it was like, okay, first step done, almost messed it up, but done. And then running into his teammates and quick footwork to get himself out of that situation. I was like, okay, we might have something here because that ability to make up for a false step on initial punt return tells me, okay, if you don't start out poorly, what are you able to do with a punt return if you get a good start to it? And then he showed us on the next one, caught that one cleanly, I thought. And looked very confident from the get-go, looked like he had the GPS lined up on his visor of exactly which route he needed to take to run to the end zone. And really just the footwork, I was so impressed by his footwork weaving through that traffic, the high knees to avoid those arm tackles and make sure that no one even slowed him down as he broke free. Just very impressive punt returning reps, both of them.
Yeah, completely agree. I think the first punt return of only 17 yards was the super impressive ones. Mm-hmm. On two separate occasions, his own man ran into him. Tampa ran into him, and then Kane ran into him that 17-yard return. And he still was able to jitterbug his way for 17 yards. He broke tackles on both runs. That was impressive. Did a good job of avoiding Waller, who is, boy, Waller for the Colts. Just as an aside here, looks like an incredible young player. Two interceptions in camp the other day to end both the two-minute drives for the Ravens. And then in this game, he was all over the place.
Yeah, I liked him coming out of the draft. Obviously, once the Ravens took Malachi Starks, it was pretty evident they probably wouldn't draft another safety unless someone really fell into a very strong value range, which didn't happen. I actually felt like the safeties were snapped up fairly quickly, day two, early day three. Anyway, Waller was a guy I did like coming out of college, just kind of a heat seeker at safety, playing down. But also something I didn't see in his college film as much was the making the plays on the ball that he did in practice. So anyway, that was an aside.
Yeah, absolutely. He's an exciting young player. And they have him on special teams. I think he'll stay there for this year at least. He might be a guy they take off special teams because he's too valuable as a safety. But obviously was right around the ball on both of the punt returns. Keith Kirkwood came in, honestly, at about the same time as Wester. He was actually in a little bit earlier than much later in the game. Strange story, but I saw a guy in a Keith Kirkwood jersey entering the stadium. And I like, are you family? And I said, yeah, he's my brother. I said, well, we've been following at camp. And, you know, it looks like a player who's been exciting, obviously a veteran player in his case, who's been around for a long time. But Kirkwood was next in the game.
Yeah, I really like Keith Kirkwood. I kind of wonder at times what he's doing in Baltimore. I kind of wondered how he came about signing here in the first place. It just felt very out of the blue, similar to Anthony Miller, but even Anthony Miller has a little bit more of that. I've flashed every now and then in my career background that the Ravens have brought in a number of those guys over the years. Kirkwood is just kind of an odd one to me, but part of the thing is I think they really like him on special teams. And he's very, very experienced on special teams. Also, you know, comfortable as a run blocker. I felt like that showed up on Thursday night. You know, before Wester really broke out on Thursday night, I thought it was a very tight race for that wide receiver six spot. But if Wester is going to return punts like that, he'll have it. But there are times when I watch Kirkwood and Anthony Miller in camp, and I do wonder why they are, you know, in this wide receiver room, when I think that there are teams that could use a bottom of the receiver veteran like them that have younger guys at the top of the depth chart. So I think Kirkwood does a lot of the little things right, and he kind of goes about his game very, very professionally. Anthony Miller, I feel like, flashes a little more, but I feel like Kirkwood is the one who just doesn't miss reps.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And last year, Kirkwood, Miller, and Deontay Johnson would be in this group. And also Sims was in the group of guys, that veterans they elevated to the roster at various times during the season. They never did it for Dayton Wade, who's the next guy I want to talk about in terms of a guy who honestly didn't look that good on Thursday night. I thought he was one of the real disappointments for the Ravens, but was fantastic in his 2024 preseason.
Yeah, Wade, I think, you know, again, the poor quarterback play merits mentioning there. I feel like but I just don't think he was getting consistent separation. I'm not sure I felt like anyone was getting consistent separation really all night. It really did feel like a very vanilla offense. And it was very easy to defend. And I think that's partly the reason why the receiver struggled so much in addition to the quarterback play. Dayton Wade, I think the main struggle for him is just that to be a depth receiver on this roster, as we just talked about, you have to be able to run block. And he just looks overmatched even when he's lined up against Nichols, because Nichols in this league are really tough and gritty. And Wade is just not he's not the slot archetype of a small, fast but really tough guy over the middle. That's just not his game.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about Wade a little more when we get to the individual players, but I agree. It was a tough, very tough night for Wade, not only in terms of how he played himself, but how his competition played. And to have LeJonte Wester return punts, be the only receiver who did anything in the game is very tough for Dayton Wade, honestly. A guy who I never really figured out why the Ravens didn't give him an elevation at some point last year, given how good he was in camp and how awful the various options they tried were there. Now, Miller, he's a pro. He was fine. But Deontay Johnson, why the hell do you trade for him when you have Dayton Wade? Why do you do that?
I mean, I think one of the things is they don't trust Wade on special teams. He's not a primary punt returner for this team. He is, like I said, he just doesn't have the tenacity to make up for his lack of size on in other roles on special teams. And so I think that's one of the reasons why, because I think if you look at Sims and Miller and Kirkwood, Kirkwood can do all sorts of things on special teams. Sims and Miller can both return. So I think that's part of the reason that Dayton Wade, this is a bad time to be trying to make the Ravens as an undrafted receiver that doesn't contribute on special teams. A couple years ago, an undrafted receiver who might be able to pop a little, be a gadget guy on offense, but not contribute as much on special teams might have had a chance, but with so much more consistent receiving talent at the top of the roster.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Now, it really is, for better and sometimes for worse, special teams that determine these back-end roster spots as well as the in-season activations. I do think at times the Ravens have an outsized focus on special teams relative to its importance, but also relative to how good they are at it. Sometimes I feel like a team that puts so much emphasis on special teams should be more consistently a top five special teams unit across the board.
I'm with you there. Outsized, yes, is the word you use, right? Yeah, I agree with that. That sometimes that occurs. They have a bunch of players on the fringe of the roster that have been contribute something on offense, contribute something on defense, and then be a good special teams player. But I don't think you could be a pure special teams player for the Ravens and make the roster.
Yeah, and I think I also don't think you can be a pure depth skill player and not contribute on special teams and make the roster. You know, I think guys that only play special teams, they need to be able to trust in the defense because they are, I think, still in ways this team has nightmares about 2021, and they want to make sure that they don't have roster spots that are taken up by Adelshawn Phillips. Was a guy who very good on special teams, I grant you, but I did not think he needed to be claimed off waivers and used a roster spot all year for him to be on just running around on special teams when he was not a contributor on defense. Weirdly, I thought the next preseason he looked really good on defense. But anyway, I just think that sometimes the emphasis on special teams, I mind that less in the season when it comes to the elevations from the practice squad. But I do think about it more in terms of the week, in terms of setting the initial roster, who you're deciding to keep and who you're not, basing it almost solely, the competitive spots are based almost solely on special teams. At the end of the day, that's really what it is. Most of the roster spots are set, and the ones that are getting decided really in training camp, it's more a matter of what they do on special teams than what they do otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, that is the way certainly they've done it, and that's part of what's behind the 25 and 25 that they almost always go through. So 53-man roster is almost always 25, 25, and 3 in terms of what they do. Harbaugh talked about this year a little bit about this being a 26 and 24 defense year in terms of the team being able to carry 6 outside linebackers. I think it's coach speak in terms of what's going on. I don't really think he intends to do it. I think that both sides of the ball are very intent on having their 25 players. And to keep a Jabo or to keep a Disa Isaac, whoever the last outside linebacker is, they might have to decide that they take 6 outside linebackers. But this decision just got a freaking lot tougher in this game because Rasheen Ali made a great case to be the 4th running back.
Kind of the same with Wester, where Wester made his very clear case to be a 6th wide receiver. The way the Ravens run their offense, they could be fine carrying 5 into the season. Just with the amount of 12, 13, 22, 23 that they run, they could carry 5 receivers on their 53-man heading in the season. But Wester, if he can be a dynamic punt returner, they are going to keep him on the roster. If I was making my 53 right now, he would be on it. Same with Ali. When you have guys that don't just contribute, but flash and make an impact on special teams, and you feel comfortable with them on the offensive side of the ball, it's very hard to deny them a roster spot. And I do not think there's room for a 6th outside linebacker on this team at all.
Yeah, a 5th outside linebacker is really what it would be. But I'm in agreement with you. I thought Wester, I didn't have him locked on the roster as the 6th offense, as the 6th wide receiver, but he is now. There's no doubt about it. And Wallace is not going anywhere. He's too valuable on special teams, too valuable as a run blocker. So they have their 6, and it's set right now. It's kind of like Tyler Loop's 63-yard field goal really made the decision on the kicker position.
Right.
I think that Wester's punt return.
It's their spot to lose.
Yeah.
They would have to make significant mistakes in order to lose that, because they have proven themselves as, okay, you got me for this and I can do this.
Yeah. And Wester, outstanding misdirection player, potentially gadget player, who could help the Ravens a lot, keep Zay Flowers on some deeper routes if they choose to do that. So he has value on offense. He just has tremendous value on special teams that I don't think the Ravens are going to be willing to give up on. Let's move on to the next set of wide receivers. Malik Cunningham, Jamal Banks, and Gilroy came in the game. Gilroy, I always pronounce that incorrectly, came in the game and honestly just got the last series or 3 that they played.
Yeah, and again, none of those guys really, really standing out. I do sometimes feel like Gilroy and Banks are big body guys who don't quite play like big body guys. In the run blocking game, we didn't see enough run blocking reps out of them in that game to really say. But the But Devin Leary, actually, I talked to him about this after the stadium practice. He said that he, you know, is more willing to go after those guys in tighter situations because they're big body targets. And they just aren't very quarterback friendly for big body targets. They don't position themselves super well. I feel like, you know, I see Banks making a lot of impressive plays at the catch point, but there are a lot of like diving, jumping catches. He doesn't do a good job of just like basically positioning and like boxing out defenders so he doesn't have to make a spectacular play.
Yeah, now there's five guys, actually maybe six, that we're going to talk about. Wade, Kirkwood, Miller, Cunningham, Banks, and Guillory. Who are the top practice squad candidates from that group? I think that the big six have been set with Bateman, Flowers, Hopkins, Walker, Wallace, and Wester. Mm-hmm. So of the last six, who are the guys you expect to be on the practice squad? Do you expect two or just one?
I think I expect... they're carrying six. I still think I would expect two just because I see the talent and I see like I would want to keep Wade. I would want to keep Wade on the practice squad just as a developmental receiver. And you know, still would like try to develop him as a returner, as a secondary returner as well. Miller always impresses me. I feel like watching him in camp, he just looks like a veteran receiver. He strikes me, he is probably the one guy that I wonder isn't why he isn't signed for a vet minimum deal with a more realistic chance at a roster spot somewhere. Just in how he looks at camp, he just looks like a veteran savvy receiver. He gets late separation, he's very good hands. You know, he's not like the most dynamic athlete, but he's certainly not washed up in that department either. So I would probably say Wade and Miller. Depending on what happens elsewhere, and if they don't get a defensive back that they really like on special teams, maybe they also think about keeping Kirkwood. But, you know, I think probably Miller is probably my top guy that I'd keep on the practice squad, truthfully, because he's the guy I would feel more confident about calling him in the season to catch passes or return punts.
You know, the Ravens in recent years have kept a lot of much older receivers on their roster. They kept Laquan Treadwell, who unbelievably is still playing and in this game had a big offensive holding call on him. But they kept players like Kirkwood. They acquired Sims. They brought in Deontay Walker, obviously, last year. They had Miller on the roster. Those guys are ancient in terms of being on the practice squad. And yet the Ravens are willing to keep those guys around.
Yeah, I think that's partially a reflection of the guys' talents on special teams of those guys. Like I said, I think it's also it's kind of the same as they've realized you can't have too many corners. You also can't have too many receivers, and they want guys. Yeah, I think Miller has like a kind of a good rapport with Lamar Jackson when in camp sometimes, and I think Miller is a guy that. They asked him to do this last year. If they need someone to come in and actually play receiver snaps, Miller seems ready to go from the practice squad. And I again repeat my amazement that no other team has thought about scooping him up to be their sixth receiver, but actually on their 53-man roster. I just think he's a very consistent player, reliable, maybe unspectacular, although he does make some really good plays at the catch point, like one-handed catches sometimes.
Last year, Justin Gage was still around, but the Ravens have had a tremendous group of players who've had catches 2 or 3 years ago in some cases. Gage had a career of a fair number of targets, you know, before then. But they kept these guys around, and nobody really wanted them in terms of picking up during the regular season.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they've sorted through a number of them. You know, they didn't try and bring back Sims. Obviously they let Walker walk or they let Deontay Johnson walk. Russell Gage just never became a thing. And so it just seems like Miller and Kirkwood are the ones that they just really like to have. They trust in special teams. They trust run blocking. They're good guys to have. I find that teams really focus on young guys on their practice squad a lot. And sometimes I feel like there's so much receiving talent in the league that, and so much high upside talent, athletic talent entering the league every year, that when you find someone that you trust as a vet, if you can keep them on your squad, I would rather do that than a dice roll on a young athlete when there are a lot of those coming every year.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting problem to try and face is who are the guys that you can really get value out of? And that often is, particularly on the offensive line, on the defensive line, it's a rookie who can turn to a year one player the next year and still have 4 years of team control, using the baseball term, on him. CJ Ravenel is a guy who obviously playing very well for the Ravens right now and is in that group. And then they've turned it over to rookies as well in terms of actually CJ Okoye is 3 years in the league now, 2 years on the practice squad to date. And Jason Jones would be another guy who looked good, I thought, in that first preseason game, but is a guy who's had who is a undrafted free agent and a chance to be good. But I at wide receiver in particular, but also at other positions, I like to have a guy who's got the potential to break out and give you 4 years of eligibility. So an R or a one on somebody's team. Ravens have done a great job scouting these guys. We already know that in terms of doing it. And when they get a player like any of these guys, really, I appreciate that. I think I like it less when they go for veteran players who have a punt return history or have a, you know, a specific role they'd like to fill. I probably like that less.
I think my only pushback with that is the young guys that you think you can develop typically are athletes. That is a pool that annually replenishes itself with kind of like unproven, unrefined athletes. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of opportunities to get those guys late in the draft or undrafted. But the receivers who are going to find a way to make an impact on the field quickly are all snapped up. They're all snapped up in the draft. So I find that the quality of the undrafted receivers that you could get on your practice squad is lower, and the value of having them is lower than the offensive and defensive linemen. Like you say, offensive line in particular, if you can have a young offensive lineman you like sneak on your practice squad, that's fantastic. That's the best thing you could do on your practice squad.
Yeah, well, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not really a fan of keeping 30-year-old wide receivers around for the potential they give you in terms of a mid-season replacement. I think that's actually fairly small, and I'd rather keep a younger player around. Now, always, as the replacement level goes down during the season because the attrition of players, you're going to lose a lot of good young players. The Ravens faced that a lot this year, I think, at nose tackle. They're going to probably put Okoye and maybe Jason Jones on the practice squad to start the year. And those guys may well be players that other teams want to pick up.
Yeah, I mean, that's why John Jenkins isn't going anywhere either with the signing of Brent Urban and the Ravens now having six potential defensive linemen to carry, which adds another wrinkle to the roster math. You know, I just think the way that they manage their practice squad is very focused on in season. At certain positions, it's very focused on the in season contributions, and at certain positions, it's we want to bank this guy, we want to keep this. You know, young. You know, Okoye is a great example of a defensive lineman they've wanted to keep and really try and develop. Now he's in a position where he might just be needed to play just because of his size alone. I mean, I know we're talking about the offense still here, but I thought he had a very nice game. I thought Okoye had a very nice game, especially compared to how he had looked at camp. I think, you know, kind of just getting on the field and just being able to unleash himself a little bit just seemed to help.
Right. The big problem with Okoye so far in camp that I've seen is he hasn't been able to keep his wind. So just recently, he was on the field, the second play of practice. It's literally the second 11-11 play of practice. He's got his hands on the hip, and he's panting, and he needed to come out of the game. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, we see him on the stationary bike on the side of the field. It's just awful, you know, that would happen. But he looked fantastic. Oh, my God. Did he look like a completely different player? I think he played 42 snaps in the game. He had that great push-pull move, which is one of the great ragdollings you'll ever see of the Colts center. And then he was in, got a quarterback hit on the, quarterback hit on the quarterback, obviously. Had another pressure in the game. I thought he had a terrific game.
Yeah, I mean, if you're if you're Dennis Johnson watching that, you must feel great about the development, that the strides that you have made with Okoye. You know, you mentioned the snap count, but really a guy with that just unteachable size, if he just develops some sense of how to use it. You know, we can talk about Daniel Falele in a minute. When a guy has unteachable size, they just have to have some semblance of how their size affects who they're facing. And once they have a better idea of how their size affects who they're facing, and in Okoye's example, how guards are forced to try and block him, the ways that they have to try and block him because of his size, and the ways that he can then exploit that with his size. Once that concept starts to lock in, that's where you see a lot of these players turn a corner.
Yeah, completely agree. And Okoye has been 2 years on the practice squad so far. I forget if it's with Las Vegas or where he was exactly, but 2 years on the practice squad. This is a year where he needs to get some actual NFL playing time. He looks like a legitimate player. I went into this game and I said, this is one of the Ravens' biggest weaknesses at nose tackle, the backup. I don't know who Jenkins is. I don't have any idea who Okoye is because he hasn't played very much even in camp, and I don't know who Jason Jones is. And I thought all of them really stepped up and played at a level where I thought this is okay. Any of these guys could be the backup nose tackle for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, Jenkins was a name I wasn't super familiar with when he signed, and obviously just going to look at his Pro Football Reference page, it's wow, 34 starts over the last 2 years jumps out to you. And so on a basic level, in the NFL, you're not going to start for 2 years in a row if you're not, as a nose tackle, if you're not just up to the basic run standards. And so from that level, I was like, okay, this is a guy they can trust as a rotational nose tackle. But I think John Jenkins is going to get on the field a good bit on early downs because they want Travis Jones to be able to be unleashed next to Nnamdi Madubuike on passing down. So I think, John Jenkins, I felt like has looked good in camp. Does not flash as a pass rusher, but that's not his job. His job is to eat space in the middle of the field and be really, really difficult to move. And I think that is just a good he's very capable of doing that for a good
price. In his first preseason game, he played 8 snaps, 6 as a pass rusher, and had 2 pressures. So I think he did flash as a pass rusher, which is what's unbelievable about the nose tackle position right now. Okoye, great push-pull move. He had a pressure. Made nice plays in the run game. I thought that Jason Jones looked good in both as well in terms of his snaps on the field. It took the Ravens defensive line, who went out this last week and got Brent Urban re-signed to the team. It took them from a do we have enough depth position to a how do we keep all these guys position.
Right. Right. You know, Jason Jones is the undrafted rookie, is probably the easiest one that you're going to try to sneak on their practice squad. But I mean, you have to imagine they have to keep the top 6, Madubuike, Travis Jones, Broderick Washington, John Jenkins, Brent Urban, and Aeneas Peoples. They could do a handshake deal with Urban, but they don't have to do those anymore because of the new IR rules. So depending on like if Isaiah Likely goes on IR or if Robert Longerbeam goes on IR or someone, maybe there's a way that they end up keeping 6 defensive linemen, but that math gets tough because they've kept five previously and been comfortable with those rotations. Although Dennis Johnson did say when I think we talked to him either in the spring or earlier in training camp, I can't remember, but he did say to the effect of, you know, I would like to keep my guys fresher out there. And I think the subtext was, he would carry 6 if they would let him.
Sure, of course. Hey, if there's any defensive line coach who wouldn't want to carry 6, I want to meet him. He's a guy who
the Ravens not have 6. Long. Probably not going to last long as the defensive line coach if you think you only need 5.
The Ravens have I think with Urban, an opportunity to bring back the handshake deal because they didn't otherwise have a guy who's obvious for that on the roster. With Urban now, they have it. They probably have an understanding with him of exactly where he's going to be to start the season. But it wouldn't surprise me if he's not on the roster. He's cut. He has a handshake deal effectively. Gets somebody else on the roster, maybe to IR, and then he's back probably for either week 1 or week 2 to start the season. But he's a guy who still denies space very well. The problem is he doesn't address the backup nose position. And the backup nose position is where the Ravens really have a shortage. They have they have John Jenkins, and hopefully he's good. He's had his career high in snaps the last 2 years, but they really need to find another guy who can play that position. It's not that they can't find someone else like that on the street, but they need to find another guy.
Yeah, or like you've been saying, if Okoye and Jason Jones, if you can go into the season with this defensive line as healthy as it is right now, and you have an Okoye and a Jason Jones on the practice squad, you keep Jenkins on the roster. I think, over the course of the season, if someone gets injured, obviously that changes the math and you might need to make a signing. But in terms of, just giving one, like we were talking about before, giving those practice squad guys some opportunities to develop, the hope would be that you could rely on Okoye and Jones, at least to start the year when everyone's relatively in good health, to take on some of those rotational nose tackle snaps. Obviously, if you get in a position where, Jenkins goes down, you might have to think about trying to go find a street signing or maybe even making a trade, just because Okoye and Jones are still such unproven entities that it's hard to hand them a backup nose tackle job, unless, of course, they get some snaps early in the season, in the regular season, and impress in them, and then you might be more confident in them down the stretch.
I think I'm worried is not the right word, because I think these guys are both gone if the season goes long enough. But I do believe that both Okoye and Jones are guys that other teams will look at as there's our next backup on our roster if anything happens to our nose tackle. So Okoye just looks so good in that game. He's just a man among boys for much of it, in terms of ragdolling the Colts center and honestly, moving laterally, he did better than I expected. We had a good play where Mike Green held the right edge, the offensive right edge, I should say, and did a good job with power. And Okoye came down and made the play like it was nothing. And I thought that was outstanding. Doesn't even list as a pure nose tackle on the Ravens roster. That's where he'll play. But outstanding night for him.
Yeah, and just surprising. We just had not seen that kind of play out of him, even flashing to me that kind of play out of him in training camp. I felt like, the conditioning is one thing, but even when he's on the field, I just didn't feel like he was flashing as that guy, which, that it's training camp, it's preseason, which means you could take it in five different directions and say, well, that Colts center must be really bad, or the Ravens offensive line depth must be really, really good. But really, it's some combination of all these things. But with Okoye as the central figure, it's like, well, once you get him in the game and get him kind of unleashed, a guy with that kind of unteachable size, he was just looked a lot better. I mean, I think Tanner Bordellini is a good center, but he's a small guy. He's going to get moved around by a guy that big. But you would expect Okoye to be – the Ravens have some relatively smaller centers and interior linemen as well, and you would expect Okoye to be moving them in practice in a way that I just haven't seen him do this summer.
No, I agree. I think that's been kind of a disappointment, honestly, so far, along with some of the lack of wind. If we move on to the offensive line here, they rested Ronnie Stanley, they rested Linderbaum, and then a lot of different players played, and some of them not in the order we would have expected. And probably the biggest surprise to me was that the first center was Corey Bullock.
Yeah, because, that's been, I think, one of the understated concerns about this offense is one of the few concerns really I have about abiding concerns I have about this offense is what they do if anything happens to Tyler Linderbaum in the short term, and also in the long term. It's no certainty they extend him and are going to need, with a contract situation like his developing and an untenable tag situation. We saw how that worked out for the Chiefs, having to pay Trey Smith and a ridiculous amount of money that I would not want to go down that path with Tyler Linderbaum. You have to think about a different center in 2026 if things don't all work out, if the business side of it doesn't work out. And so that's why I was so interested to see Bullock take those first snaps over Nick Samak. I'm not surprised that Bullock was the two, because he is pretty consistently kind of competing with Samak to be the second center in training camp. But Samak was a guy they drafted last year Bullock kind of gets the experience edge. I thought it was interesting that he started the game.
There are three other guys who've gotten snaps during training camp. You and I are over there watching the offensive line on a lot of days. It's one of the most interesting things is to see Warhop go from rep to rep along this line. But we've seen Bullock at center. We've seen Dellinger at center. He didn't get a chance there in this game. We saw Dalcourt extensively at center last training camp being a guy. And also Reed Holsky got a chance this year. He's one of the guys that was pointed out by Warhop as a guy who's going to get chances at center. They have a lot of options there. And this is a game where I think, regardless of how you think he played in the game, I think you have to believe that Nick Samak is in a much less secure position to make the roster this year.
Yeah, I felt like he was on the bubble, and his experience as a center in this offense was really his saving grace. But Bullock has been around too. I forget if Bullock was on the practice squad all of last year or just most of last year.
Yeah, what each of them is basically 1 year with the Ravens. Bullock on the practice squad and Samak on the roster.
Samak on the roster, right. And so, you know, with Samak pretty much never playing, that's roughly equivalent types of exposure that you're getting in ways guys in the practice squad serving as the scout team sometimes get more opportunities in practice throughout the year than the second team center might. So, you know, I think that is a very tight competition. I think Dellinger is a guy they want to transition into being a center, but I don't think he would be ready to be a backup center this year. So I think Dellinger is probably a depth guard this year that they want to train up as a center for next year to be a backup center. I think would be a really good result for Dellinger next year, I think, provided that Linderbaum stays. But there is still an active competition to figure out who is going to be this year's backup center.
Yeah.
I felt that Samak and Bullock both played well. I feel like Samak has looked better in camp this year than he did last year. And I always like to see that development in the second year. A guy making a marked improvement in a second year shows me that he really took advantage of being in the organization from the beginning of the offseason and working hard to refine his craft. Bullock, I didn't feel has stood out in training camp. I thought he acquitted himself fine. I the whole offensive line really, they allowed a lot of pressures. Suck.
Yeah.
That's just as good of a way to put it. They did suck. And that is one of the reasons why I was not super, super overly critical of Devin Leary at the top of this podcast, because to a certain extent, he just didn't have a chance. And he is a young quarterback, and it is unfortunately one of his characteristics to panic and make bad decisions. It was something we have seen from him in the past. And once his offensive line started falling apart, he never recovered from it. He certainly didn't rebound to it. He didn't respond the way that you'd want a quarterback to, but his offensive line just wasn't giving him time. There were, especially on the interior, there were just a lot of rushers in his face.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly agree with that. I think one of the disappointing offensive linemen in this game was Dellinger not getting an opportunity at center. And this is something that really showed up in the order of entry, is that nobody played multiple positions. The only guy who played two positions in the whole game was Noteboom, who played three series at left tackle and then one at right tackle. And he is, in a sense, the Ravens' most important backup lineman because he's a backup tackle. But I mean, Dellinger played only left guard. Samak played only center. He's played a lot of guard in his career so far. Dalcourt, who's played a lot of center, played only right guard. It was just a Cleveland played only left guard, even though he's, in a lot of ways, the Ravens' most versatile offensive lineman after McCary is gone.
I guess if you count versatile as a guy who can play both guard spots and theoretically can play center and theoretically can play right tackle,
there you go. I
might even trust Noteboom to play four positions before I trust Cleveland. I'll let's start with Dellinger. One of the things with Dellinger to me is he's learning center. That's learning snapping the ball. It's learning how to, but more importantly, it's learning how to be the linchpin of the offensive line. It's learning how to be the quarterback's partner at the line of scrimmage. And I think those are things that he just wasn't asked to do in college as a guard. And I think that's part of the reason why they didn't get him out there at center yet. I'm curious to see if they do it at all this preseason. I think not doing so would be a mistake especially in that third game when things are pretty much decided and you're just trying to get different guys, different looks. But I think part of the reason that everyone played one position is that it really feels like this offensive line has been set for a while now. It's going to be the same starting five as the starting five was last year in week one. It seems very clear for better and for worse. And so I think in ways the Ravens were trying to take a look at everyone in an individual spot to figure out how the rest of the depth chart was going to filter down. And then I think maybe in these next games, they'll probably move guys around to different spots and figure out, okay, which one of you can back up the most positions and stay on the roster. Because Samak has worked, I feel like in the spring I saw him work at guard, but I don't think
he's worked at guard a lot.
Has he kept working at guard this summer? I feel like I haven't seen it quite as much in the summer.
He's the number two center, no doubt about that. He's the number one nothing. The question is, does he do anything else with the threes to be a guard or not? And some of that is limited by the amount of linemen that they have available. So they want to get them all time, which is why, for example, you don't see a lot of exotic sets, particularly on defense during the preseason games, because they need to get two inside linebackers, two outside linebackers also,
yeah,
two or three defensive linemen, two or three cornerbacks, and two safeties. They need to see them all. Mm-hmm. And they're less concerned about, do we have a player who's the optimal situation at that? Because, hey, it's preseason. They don't really care. They'd love to see if Sanusi Kane can actually cover as a deep half field safety.
Right. And so on the flip side for the offensive line, I think Noteboom, getting him snaps at both left and right is obviously so important because he's backing up both spots. But for everyone else, I kind of appreciated the approach for everyone else, just focus on one spot for the night, given how often they rotate them around in practice and how I feel that sometimes in past preseasons, they've moved a ton of guys around and it has been to the detriment of not only them, but the linemen around them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, they looked at that this game in trying to focus players, and I think it may change in the coming two games. Nick, outstanding talking football with you as always. We're going to come back for part two, but tell folks where they can follow you online and talk football with you if they want to.
Yeah, you can find me on X at Nick, N-I-K, knows ball. You can also find my written work on Russell Street Report out there at training camp almost every day.
All right. Outstanding. Nick, one of the people I really enjoy watching practice with. He's very engaged with the activity on the field. We got most of the people are fairly engaged, but if you want to ask somebody, who was the target on the last play or who was covering in the last play, Nick's one of the good guys along with Jonas Schaefer to really talk about that with. And so we tend to congregate over there on one side of the, group. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, there will be a time coming up between the last preseason game and the first regular season game. We'll have time for a couple of those. Hit me up with DMs directly on Twitter. Otherwise, listen and subscribe if you're on YouTube. And otherwise, tell your friend about this podcast. Always word of mouth is the way we grow. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.